did early medieval kings govern? How far did they rely upon personal relationships to carry out their commands? And how far could they rely upon institutions and structures? To what extent could they impose law and order? Was governance sufficiently centralised that a king could ensure that his authority was recognised and obeyed in the farthest flung outposts of the kingdom? These are all basic and essential questions when discussing the governance of 10th and 11th century Anglo-Saxon England, and they raise the issue of how far late Anglo-Saxon government relied upon exploiting personal structures such as lordship and the family to rule, and how far it had its own effective officers of the state and of institutions. The West Saxon conquest of the Danelaw in the first half of the 10th century extended the rule of the kings of Wessex way beyond their southern territorial base and hugely increased the areas under their control. By 954, East Anglia, the Danish-controlled parts of the Midlands and the North, had all submitted to their new Anglo-Saxon rulers. These regions had previously been governed as separate kingdoms with their own dynasties, but had fallen under Viking control in the 9th century. Their traditions and customs were therefore partly established in the pre-Viking age and were shaped by a mixture of English and Scandinavian practices. For the West Saxons, this massive enlargement of their kingdom must have posed immediate problems of authority and control. Their response was both to respect local traditions and gradually to impose their own structures and laws. This respect for local customs can be seen in the nomenclature used for administrative institutions. So Yorkshire was divided into ridings, the three ridings of Yorkshire, a word borrowed from Old Norse, a Scandinavian language. And we see also the adaptations of royal laws for local consumption. Both Edgar and Ethelred made allowances in their codes for Danish customs in the Midlands and in the North.